Butterflies would turn someday.
10 ways society trains women to doubt their own safety instincts. And I hope that once you embrace this, this sets you alight too. Now, many women can remember a moment when their instincts spoke clearly. It was a feeling in your stomach, a tightening in your chest. It was a quiet inner voice saying, oh, you know, something's not right here. You know, when we train about kids, we talk about kids feel this instinctively, those stomach aches, those headaches that they get from childhood. And then someone just kind of erases that, kind of overrides it. But because another voice arrives, maybe you're overreacting, right? Maybe you misunderstood, and maybe you're being unfair. And over time, many a woman learns a difficult lesson. The world trusts politeness, reputation, and appearances far more than it trusts a woman's instinct. And this pattern shows up right in your home, in your workplace, in your school, in your faith community, your neighborhood, and public spaces. And when it repeats often enough, it can cause a woman to question your own judgment. And now you're not listening to those body signals anymore. You're listening to the crowd. You're listening to people outside of you, people who are telling you that you're being mean, that you're being wrong. You're not listening to your internal signals, your little voice anymore. You stop listening to that. So the kids get the headaches and the stomach aches and all of those things. Somewhere along the line, you stop listening to that. Now, what happens between, here are 10 ways society subtly trains women to doubt what was given to you. The natural came with you. It was like downloaded. You came here with it. What your instincts already know. I'm going to give you 10 ways. Number one, teaching girls to be polite before being safe. So many girls hear messages like, be nice, don't make a scene. And you, listen, you don't want to hurt that person's feelings. Kindness is prioritized before anything else. But when politeness is prioritized above safety, girls may feel pressure to tolerate discomfort rather than respond to it. Instinct, her instinct says, ooh, I gotta step away, cringe. But the training says, stay and be polite. And this is why we say, nobody has an experience like a little girl. You got to be a little girl. Because there is training that goes along with being a little girl. Number two, treating discomfort as rudeness. Treating your discomfort as rudeness. When a woman declines attention or pulls away from someone who makes her uneasy, she's quickly labeled, even by those close to her, as being cold, difficult, and dramatic. How dare you do that? She's reprimanded. Over time, what this teaches women and girls, that protecting themselves, that can come with social punishment, even from your inner circle. And so many of us learn to doubt your own discomfort, to go home or even in the moment to question ourselves instead of honoring it and saying, well, wait a minute, let me check in with myself and figure out what's going on, because this is information and we're not taught to read it as information. Number three, rewarding people who ignore boundaries. If a person persists after hearing no, we see this in a lot of films. A person who persists after hearing no is sometimes praised for being, they're determined, they're confident, they are romantic. That's what those films are about. They're romantic. They're persuasive. But persistence against someone's clear boundary is a test of that boundary. I remember I was in the mall one day. I was in such a hurry. I had a million things to get done this Saturday. And there was someone selling something in a kiosk, something about nails. And he gave a whole spiel of something about selling something on the, you know, about nails. And the answer wasn't yes or no, but I said, no, thank you. And he said, no? Did you say no? And I was like, you know, I just kept going. I had a million things to get done that Saturday, you know. And so, you know, it's like sometimes people are not prepared for us women to say no. You know, like, that's like, he hadn't even prepared for me to say no. It was early. I was one of the first people in the mall. And he was, like, totally not prepared. So, yeah, persistence is supposed to get them in the door. Like, you're not supposed to say no. You're supposed to, you know, you're supposed to let me in. When society celebrates this behavior, it quietly undermines a woman's right to trust her own limits. And like I said, this is over time. Number four, grooming through familiarity. Many people still imagine danger as coming from strangers. I know that we say it and we say it and we say it and we say it. But so many people, especially bad actors, people who want to make women think that the boogeyman person is the person that, you know, that you should fear, especially those bad actor types. And we keep saying, oh, it's the familiar folk. And by familiar, I mean, yes, folk in your home, but I also mean people in your circle. I also mean people who come and invade and cubby up and try to, you know, meander their way into your circle and, you know, make themselves familiar and, you know, all of a sudden they, you know, make themselves familiar, into your circle. I mean those too. Many people still, you know, imagine, you know, it's the other people. But harm comes from people who have built familiarity, gained that trust. And so now you're fighting other people saying, no, it's not this person because, you know, I will fight you over them. You're like, but you just like met them and now they're newly familiar to you. So that means them too, they're newly familiar to you. Position, because they position themselves as helpful or respected, but okay. When women express concern about someone who appears kind or admired, you may hear things like, but he's such a nice person, or, but you know, he's harmless, or, oh, he's having a hard time. Okay. This response can make, you know, other women question their own instincts. Even, again, you stop listening to yourself. Why did we do that? Why do we do that? Number 5, protecting reputation over safety. Now, institutions sometimes prioritize their stability, image, or authority. They're good for this. When concerns are raised, the response may focus on protecting the organization because there's a lot at stake. It's often a lot riding on that. On avoiding conflict, on maintaining the appearance that, hey, we got it all together over here. We have it all together. Instead of asking, well, wait a minute, what happened? Because the truth is, you can recover from this. You can say, it's okay to say, this happens, this is possible that institutions get this wrong because, you know, the key thing to say is, you know what, wherever there are people, it's possible that this happens. It's not about the institution being a bad space. But people don't like to say that. So, you know, instead of asking what happened, the attention may shift toward how will this affect our reputation? And we just shake our heads and go, that's not the direction you want to go in. People will understand if you say, hey, whatever you have people, you can, you know, this can happen. And what we had here was a group of people. And this is what happened. But no. Now, when this happens, such as we're talking institutions, we're talking campuses, we're talking workplaces, we're talking, you know, spaces like that. Women quickly learn that speaking up may bring scrutiny rather than protection. They already know. And that's a shame. That's a shame because it's too easy for such spaces to say, hey, we have people, and where we have people, we can have problems. And here's the thing about our institution. We have the courage to address this, and we have the infrastructure already in place to address this. Too few do that. Number 6, framing survival responses as character flaws. When women respond to harm with anger, distance, or strong boundaries, those responses, nearly always these days, are criticized. And then down the road a piece, and I'm talking decades, there's an apology. But long before we get to that, there are words like bitter, hateful, bigoted, overly sensitive. She's just unable to move on. She's got problems, personal problems. And that's terrible. And you know what? It would be terrible for me not to mention that we put women in prison for defending themselves against abusive persons. We put women in prison. And many of these reactions are normal survival responses. But we label them as character flaws and overreactions. And it teaches women to distrust their own protective instincts, and it teaches them, hey, I don't want to fall into that whole area there, that abyss. I certainly don't want to fall over there. I kind of want to stay in this area. And that's terrible. It's terrible not just for those women, not just for women in general. It's terrible for our society because as we keep noticing, it gets more dangerous and more dangerous and more dangerous for us all. Number 7, questioning women more than the harm. Questioning women more non-violent women, by the way, more than the harm. When a woman reports harm, the question often turn toward her action. The questions often turn toward her actions. You know what? Why were you there? Why didn't you leave sooner? Why didn't she leave the harm sooner? As if there weren't threats, as if there wasn't fear. Why didn't you say something earlier? Again, no fear. Sure, no fear. Sure. This pattern sends a quiet message. Your decisions will be examined more closely than the person who harmed you. Because if you think that when women come to advocates with, you know, without these explanations spilling out of their mouths, like when we're like, hold on. You don't have to wait. You don't have to justify. Wait. And that's terrible that we've made people feel that way. Because they encountered harmful people. That's like watching a horror movie. And imagine. And they've encountered some horrific, you know, the villain or the monster or what have you. And then they run and then they finally encounter help. And now they got to spill out all this, you know, all these defenses instead of, you know, running to us and say, oh, my goodness, thank gosh, you're here. I'm terrified. He's right there. No, they don't get to do that because we've made them feel that we're not safety. We're not safety. We're not safety. And we won't understand. That's who we are. And that's who we are. Over time, women may learn that trusting their instincts does not guarantee they will be believed. Because by and large, population wide, that's who we have made ourselves. That's what we've turned ourselves into. The equivalent, pretty much, of a monster. Number 8, encouraging women to give the benefit of the doubt. Women are frequently encouraged to assume the best intentions in others. Compassion is important. I'm a firm believer in it. But when women are expected to constantly reinterpret troubling behavior, in the most generous light, their instincts may be pushed aside. See, some stuff, you know, is for the God light. We're not God. Some stuff is for the God light. We're not God. Sometimes instinct says, you do not have enough information yet. And therefore, something deserves caution. I need more information. Now I don't have enough. So I need to keep a lot of distance. And that voice deserves respectful space. Okay. I'm seeing some things and maybe I'm not clear, I'm not sure. And that's okay. That's healthy. In fact, that's healthy. Number 9. Silencing survivors through social pressure. Many women who speak openly about harm experience pushback such as, you're ruining lives. See, this should stay private. You're causing division. When communities pressure women to remain silent for the sake of someone else's peace, especially a harm doer's peace. Not the harmed person's peace, a harm doer's peace. Because see, if you wanted peace, perhaps you shouldn't have done the harm. This is how we learn. They reinforce the idea that protecting comfort, the harm doer's comfort, is more important than acknowledging the truth. Silence can become the price of belonging to something that's toxic and harmful, and silencing putrid, strangling. Yeah, that's not cool. Number 10, treating instinct as emotion instead of intelligence. Instinct is often dismissed as irrational or overly emotional. But instinct isn't random. It's the result of pattern recognition, lived experience, observation, subtle signals the brain processes quickly often. Many women notice shifts in tone, posture, or behavior long before the entire situation becomes obvious. Instinct, it is not weakness. It's not weakness. Instinct is information. Reclaiming the wisdom of instinct. Across cultures, generations, women have carried deep knowledge about safety, dignity, and boundaries. Some women learn to trust those instincts early, and that's a beautiful thing. Others were taught to silence them. But you know, instincts, they don't disappear. They remain waiting to be heard again. When women begin to listen to that inner voice, something powerful happens. Clarity returns. Boundaries strengthen. Safety becomes easier to recognize. And perhaps, most importantly, the wisdom women carry within themselves begins to lead the way again. Now here's a thought to carry forward. Your instincts were not placed within you by accident. They are part of your protection. If someone has taught you to doubt your own safety instincts, you can come back home to them. They're still there for you. They're still there. You can come back home to them. You can come back home to them. You can reinvigorate them. Isn't that good news? Listen, thanks for listening. Protect your safety instincts. Protect your wisdom. Value it highly. Listen, I want to thank you for listening, and protect your greatness. All right, thanks for listening. Y'all have a great one.
This is Tanya GJ Prince. Thanks for listening. Y'all be great.